And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is smorgasbord. Each of my guests has an interesting morsel of knowledge to share with us about his subject. My next guest has examined conspiracy theories from all angles to discover new connections between wide swaths of events. We'll discuss his latest work, Cryptscatology. Robert Guffey is a lecturer in the English department at Cal State University, Long Beach. He's published numerous articles, short stories, and interviews in a wide range of publications, such as Aftershocks, Art from Art, Catastrophe, The Chiron Review, Fortran Times, The New York Review of Science Fiction, Paranoia, Pearl, Postscripts, and UFO Magazine. His latest book, as I said, is Cryptscatology, Conspiracy Theory as an Art Form. Joining us from Long Beach. Hi, Robert. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Well, good. Thank you so much for being our guest and for writing a very interesting book. And I guess the place I'd like to start with you is this, the most fundamental level. What is our fascination with conspiracy theories? Why are we drawn to them in the first place?
Well, first of all, it's cryptoscatology. Very important that you missed the O.
Ah.
The O is very important.
Thank you for correcting me, Professor.
Because it's from... Actually, technically, I'm a lecturer, but if you want to give me a promotion, make me full professor, that's fine.
All right.
Give me a PhD at the same time. The word cryptoscatology is something I constructed from crypto, in Latin meaning secret, and scatology, which is, of course, is the study of SH, you continue the four-letter word yourself. I don't think I can say it.
No, you can't. Not on the radio. Thank right. you for not doing that.
Right. So, basically, it's the study of secret stuff, all kinds of secret stuff. And the fascination with conspiracies goes back to, I mentioned the Illuminati right before we came on the air.
Yes.
And the Illuminati is interesting because the Illuminati, whatever you think the Illuminati is generally whatever you're afraid of. If you're a right-wing conspiracy theorist, the Illuminati are left-wing communists trying to take over the world through the Obama administration. If you're a left-wing conspiracy theorist, then the Illuminati are right-wing masterminds behind the scenes trying to take over the world as well. So it's sort of a Rorschach blot upon which you project whatever you're afraid of.
All right, and that makes sense. But why do we as humans try to find ways to believe in these conspiracy theories?
Well, also, to get back to what I was just saying briefly, I don't want to make it sound like I'm making fun of conspiracy theories, because in fact I'm actually deadly in earnest support of some of them throughout the book. So at the same time, I don't hesitate to rib a certain conspiracy theorists who I feel deserve it. Once you get into researching this, it becomes kind of overwhelming, and you can see how easily it is to go down the rabbit hole when you begin to see patterns everywhere. My wife and I will be driving, and I don't drive, my wife does, so I have time to look at the scenery, mm-hmm. and I'll see like Kabbalistic codes embedded in license plate numbers. And for a brief moment, I'll think it's actually there, and then I'll stop myself and realize, oh no, I'm just imagining that. But once you go down the rabbit hole and you see patterns everywhere, it's very easy to keep going down. Robert Anton Wilson said, who wrote the Illuminatus trilogy, he said, if you go into this field of study, you really have to come armed with the wand of reason. Otherwise, you're going to be afraid of the great green goo from outer space eventually.
All right. My guest is Robert Guffey. We're talking about conspiracy theories. So this particular book, Robert, it took you 14 years to complete the book. Why so long? Did it take you that long to come up with the wand of reason, as you call it?
Well, you know what? When you tell people you spent 14 years writing a book, they assume that you were working on just that one thing. Like, you weren't doing anything else during that 14 years. You're sort of like in an ivory tower cutting this book manuscript out of stone slabs or something. I was doing many other things at the same time. But it took 14 years because it takes that long to sort of get inside the enigma, the riddle, and see it from all perspectives, which I try to do.
All right. My guest is, I'm sorry, Robert, didn't mean to cut you off there. My guest is Robert Guffey. So talk to us then, if you will, please, because in the book you really draw a distinction between conspiracy theories and mythology. What's the difference between the two?
Well, a myth is not necessarily something that's a lie or not true. Carl Jung studied myths, and he considered them to be important. And so Oliver Stone once said that his film JFK was a counter myth. That didn't necessarily mean that it was true or was not true. It was simply an alternative way of viewing the universe. And so in the first chapter, I lay out sort of subgenres of conspiracy, five subgenres, insanity, disinformation, misinformation, satire, and legitimate research. And then I give examples of each. I start with insanity, and that's the easiest to identify. One time I was in Monterey, California, and I saw a truck parked near a building. I had never been in Monterey before. This was the first time I was there. There was a big white van there with a sign on it that said Stephen King shot John Lennon. And there was an aging hippie in the back. And I saw the sign and I immediately thought, I got to talk to this guy. Eccentric people tend to interest me. And so I go up to him, I knock on the door, and he opens it, and he was clearly living in the van. And he had a stack of these stapled pamphlets. That was the title of the book, Stephen King Shot John Lennon. And he talked to me for about 16 minutes, about as long as this interview is, and about how Mark David Chapman did not shoot John Lennon. It, in fact, was Stephen King. He seemed very convinced of this. And, in fact, after this interview airs, he will no doubt call in to tell you that this is indeed true. I even include his pager number in the book, which he said he told me to disseminate this information because, of course, it was very important that everyone realize that the author of Carrie killed John Lennon. Immediately, you can identify that as being insane. It's pretty clear. So I use that as an example of insanity.
Right.
And disinformation would be when someone purposely makes up a conspiracy theory to just muddy the water. And in fact, there is evidence of intelligence agencies doing exactly that. They will plant stories in the National Enquirer or in little conspiracy zines just to muddy things up.
Now, would you consider the UFO sightings and Roswell in 1947 to be part of that disinformation?
Not necessarily as a whole. I think that there's a lot of legitimate research that goes on in the UFO community. There's an excellent book, a recent book called Camouflage Through Limited Disclosure by Randy Kopang, K-O-P-P-A-N-G. That's postgraduate level work. That's very good research on the UFO field. But within the UFO field, sometimes you'll get stories like there was a documentary called UFO Cover-Up Live that appeared on a major station in the late 80s. And they had very good interviews with witnesses that had obviously seen something and were sincere. In the middle of it, they had this story with these supposedly government agents in silhouette talking about how they learned that aliens love to eat strawberry ice cream. And something about that seems to indicate that I wouldn't believe that myself.
It sort of discredited the whole thing.
Yeah, so you're sitting there listening to legitimate stories, people who've seen things, and then suddenly they put in this thing about the strawberry ice cream, and it makes you just discount the whole thing. Of course, aliens really like pistachio ice cream. So the strawberry ice cream thing is complete disinformation. Now, the third category is misinformation, and that is when someone has a conspiracy theory that's sincere, but it's inaccurate. There's a guy named Rene. He has one name, like Cher, and he wrote a book called NASA Mooned America, which is just a beautiful title with an exclamation point. And the book comes bound in electrical tape, which is always a good sign. And it's all about how we never went to the moon. So you read the book, and you see he confuses silhouettes with shadows. He gets very basic scientific facts wrong. However, on the other hand, he actually, I think, proves in the book that NASA goes out of its way to fake photographs. He shows these photographs side by side, and you can tell that, in fact, yes, NASA fakes photographs. I don't know why they do that, but he decided that was because we never went to the moon. I don't think that's true. So that would be misinformation. That would be where you have a mixture of truth and untruth, and then the researcher is sincere, but he's giving out false information.
All right.
Then the fourth category would be satire, and that is where someone's making up a conspiracy theory to make some kind of political point. And in fact, one of the most infamous books of conspiracy theory, The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was used by the Nazis to try to convince everyone that the Jews were trying to take over the world, actually began as a piece of fiction. It was a play. It was a satirical play that the Nazis then rewrote and inserted the word Jew in there instead of what was originally in there, and rewrote it to, and said it was nonfiction. So there's examples of that as well. There was a guy whose name escapes me at the moment, but he wrote a book about Freemasonry in Paris in the 1800s, about the Freemasons worshipping Baphomet and sacrificing children under the full moon, etc. And he wrote it absolutely as a complete satire, and he actually eventually admitted this, and he was a bit of a puckish prankster. And yet to this day, anti-Masonic conspiracy theorists quote the book as if it were real, not knowing that it was a satire. There's another guy named Leonard Lewin who wrote a book called Report on Iron Mountain in the late 60s. He wrote that as a satire on the entire industrial military complex. And in that book, it was supposedly a conglomeration of real documents that attempted to prove that the United States government were going to fake an alien invasion in order to get more funding for the Pentagon. And it was a complete satire, but people thought it was real. So that's another obscure category.
All right.
Conspiracy theory. And then the last one would be legitimate research, and that would be people who are actually diligent investigative journalists who get labeled as conspiracy theorists because what they're saying is too challenging or too dangerous. The book that got me into conspiracy theory was a book called The Assassination of Robert Kennedy by William Turner and John Christian. William Turner was an FBI agent. John Christian was a legitimate investigative journalist. And it was all about analyzing the assassination of Robert Kennedy. I think it's a very well-written book, and I recommend that. And then there's books by Dr. Alan Cantwell called AIDS and the Doctors of Death, which is all about AIDS being by a warfare weapon. And Jim Mars, who wrote Alien Agenda about UFOs. That's a good book about UFOs.
Jim has been a guest on this show.
I just spoke to Jim for the first time not long ago, and he gave me a very positive endorsement for the book, which pleased me because I read his book Crossfire, which, of course, was the part of the source material for Oliver Stone's JFK.
Mm-hmm.
I read that when I was very young, and so it's been gratifying to receive endorsements from people who influenced me early on, and he was one of those people who gave me an endorsement.
No doubt, no doubt about it. My guest is Robert Guffey, author of the book Cryptoscatology, Conspiracy Theory as Art Form. So let's take a look at some of the conspiracy theories, even some of the ones that you brought up, and let's start with perhaps the most ingrained in Americans, the American psyche, and that's the JFK assassination. You've already alluded to Jim Marr's book. You've alluded to the Oliver Stone book about Oliver Stone movie about JFK. Talk to us about that conspiracy theory, and give us your take on it, if you will, please.
It's odd that you should ask, because I was just now writing an article that started out to be only about 20 pages and then eventually turned into 120 pages, and it's all about analyzing the JFK assassination in terms of how it erupts in the collective unconscious in the form of film. Sometimes when something traumatic happens, of course, and you repress it, it comes out in, say, dreams or artwork, and in America it seems to come out in film. And so I analyze all these films that attempt to talk about all the information about the JFK assassination prior to Oliver Stone's film. But all these conspiracy theories erupt into sort of quasi-science fictional films, like The Parallax View from the early 70s, or Winter Kills, which was from the late 70s, based on a Richard Condon book. What's fascinating is that after Oliver Stone's film, where it was no longer encoded in fiction, this was a film that was saying, this is what happened. After JFK came out, it actually prompted the release of a lot of government documents about the JFK assassination that would not have been released if Oliver Stone's film had not come out. And it took many years for researchers to go through, comb through those documents. And it's very interesting. There was one document that seems to indicate, and this was aired in an excellent series of documentaries called The Men Who Killed Kennedy, which you can see on YouTube in their entirety, because the station that originally aired them, which I believe was the History Channel,
it was
no longer airs one of the episodes for legal reasons, but you can see it on YouTube. So I would watch all six episodes. In the last episode, they analyzed one of these documents, which seems to indicate that Lee Harvey Oswald was actually working for the Kennedy administration as an agent, in an attempt to assassinate Fidel Castro, which is interesting because in Winter Kills, the movie that came out in the late 70s by Richard Condon, he wrote it, they suggest satirically, I'm sure it was meant satirically, that JFK was killed by his own family, by his own father killed him because he was mucking things up and not following the script. I'm sure Condon meant that satirically. What's funny is that that satirical notion sort of predicts possibly what actually happened in the sense that JFK and RFK's attempt to covertly assassinate Fidel Castro, that secret network of agents was hijacked by someone else, who knows, and then those guns turned on JFK. This would be a reason why Robert Kennedy could never talk about what actually happened. When he heard that this man named Lee Harvey Oswald had killed his brother, he was probably quite shocked, as he probably recognized the name. And these documents indicate that, and there's a writer named Edward Haslam who wrote a book called Dr. Mary's Monkey, where he goes into this in some detail in the last chapter. And I would recommend that, the Dr. Mary's Monkey, as the best current book about the JFK assassination. Of course, Jim Morris's The Crossfire is also recommended, which I understand Jim told me that he's doing a update, much updated version of that book that would be coming out soon. So I would absolutely recommend that as well with regards to JFK assassination theories.
Oh, that's a good tip. My guest is Robert Duffy, author of the book Cryptoscatology. So, Robert, it's interesting. In your book, you write something that piqued my interest. You write that paranoia is the great undiscovered art form of the 21st century. Describe what you mean by that, and how does that tie back into conspiracy theories?
Well, it's interesting. I teach English. I've taught English full-time at CSU Long Beach for about 10 years now. And I'll assign position papers, and I'll say you can write about whatever you want to write about, you know, an argumentative essay arguing something. And I was surprised by the fact, with no prompting from me, that a lot of the students would pick topics that were conspiratorial in nature, whether it was 9/11 or UFOs or we never went to the moon or Atlantis, whatever. A lot of young people, teenagers, people in their early 20s, seem interested in the subject. It would be something that they actually went out of their way to research. They weren't doing PhD theses on it, but at least they were doing research on it. It prompts their interest. And so I think it was at that point that I realized that in about 10, 15 years from now, conspiracy theory will be recognized as an actual literary genre. It'll be considered like we analyze the science fiction genre or detective novels or something.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that it's necessarily fiction. It's just that it's this sort of undiscovered art form that sort of hovers around the edges of things, and no one seems to recognize it.
And we're going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Robert Duffy, author of the book Cryptoscatology, Conspiracy Theory as Art Form. Robert, if you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I have a website, cryptoscatology.com, and then also the book is available through Amazon and Trine Day's website as well.
That is great. Robert, thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.